Blog Talk Radio. Salam and good day to the goddesses and gods. We hope your daily life is going pleasant, divine. If you continue to listen to this record, your psyche is voluntarily entering the terms and agreements of all good and no evil. Anyone who is found utilizing evil will be exiled by the host. And this is a notice and disclaimer inside for the love of commerce. We never give legal advice and we never practice law. If you are searching for those things, you will have to search somewhere outside for the love of commerce. So for all mention, we offer grace and benevolence.
Peace to the gods. Peace to the gods, man. Hello, world. How are we doing
Peace
today?
Peace to the gods.
Hey, what up, Kalam? Man, how are you today, my brother?
Doing beautiful. Doing beautiful, brother. How you doing today?
Oh, man. Wonderful, 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 man. Wonderful. Kind of had a long night, you know what I'm saying? Me and the wife was out. Kind of enjoying, like, we enjoyed the blues band, man. They had a blues band downtown. So, man, we kind of stayed out a little late last night. Kind of, you know, far left a little bit. Man, it was beautiful, man. You know, I love those instruments, man. One thing about me,
right,
man, I love instruments. And, yeah, man, it was beautiful. It was beautiful.
Yeah, man.
So
that's what's up.
How's everything on your end, man?
Thing is divine and pleasant, man. I can't even complain on this side. Everything going, like, real smooth, you know? I just waiting for this other LLC to come through, so start operating with that one, and you know get a little
okay
into the real estate, you know.
Right.
That's really what I'm waiting on right now on my side. How about yourself?
Oh man, you know, it's the same over here. I haven't actually put together another LLC, but I think I want to go in and start trying to capitalize off of, you know, other organizations, right? Like, and I was looking up this one business. Matter of fact, it's a Subway. And I'm thinking about me and my partner, we're thinking about kind of going into trying to open us up a Subway and, you know, trying to capitalize off of them for a while and then, you know, generate a little wealth off of them and, you know, go ahead and do our own thing afterwards. It's easy money, man, easy money.
Yeah, yeah, you're going to make some capital.
Yeah, yeah, I'm taking my time with it. And trying to, you know, talk to more people who has already been through it, and just basically just trying to do my due diligence with it. So, yeah,
right,
man.
Right.
So, man, it's easy money, man. I tell people all the time, you know, a lot of us are in a position to capitalize off certain businesses, you know what I'm saying? Even if you're going to work with someone else, you can still build your own brand off of the company that you're working for. But a lot of us are just so comfortable with just working for someone else. They don't realize the strategy, you see what I'm saying? Before building my first brand, which was ROC Enterprises, I had to work with several different companies just to, before I realized, like, you know what, that I'm capitalizing off of these people. Let me go ahead and build my own. If I'm doing it with them, I could do it by myself. So,
yeah,
you know, You know, it's all about how you want to, you know, how things. I don't want to be working for someone else for the rest of my life. I want to be able to build. I don't want my children working for somebody else. You see, I want to be able to have enough strategy set in place to where, you know, hey, look, you guys come right behind me, and we're gonna capitalize this way. Just depending on what they want to do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They might not want to follow
family
my
business.
They might want to do something. Yeah, you see what I'm saying? So, yeah, it's all about how you want to strategize out here, man. But,
right.
Of course, today is a knowledgeable Sunday. And this day we pick to give you guys some knowledge, information on just anything we could think of that's well needed that we utilize every single day. And I see in the chat, and again, if you want to be a part of the private chat, please send us an email at fortheloveofcommerce@gmail.com. And we will gladly add you to the private chat where it's plenty of valuable information that you can use day to day. All right? And again, I see that in the private chat, man, we have information dealing with contracts. Man, that's a good one because people doing contracts every day, and they don't even realize it, man. Yeah, they're doing contracts every single day. So this is a great topic. I hope all our listeners out there really pay attention to what's about to be talked about, you know? All right. So let's go into contract etymology. And it says late contract verb late 14C to draw into a smaller compass, become smaller, shrink, and transitive. Early 15C, make an agreement, enter into a contract, agree or establish to undertake mutually, from Old French contractor, and directly from Latin contractus, past participle of contrahere, to draw several contracts together, draw in, shorten, lessen, abridge, metaphorically. Make a bargain, make an agreement from as a matched form of come with together, see con, trahere, to draw, see track, now one, related, contracted, contracting. Meaning to acquire as by habit or contagion, become infected with, is from 1590s, transitive sense of make narrow, draw together the parts of something, to cause it to shrink, is from 1600s. Grammatical sense of to shorten, a word or symbol by combining or eliding.
That one is syllable. You good?
Okay, word or syllable by combining or eliding concurrent elements is from 1600th century. Transitive sense of arrange for by contract is from 1897. And then you have contract now, early 14C, agreement between two or more. Man, I'm going to have to step in because I see it's a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
All right. Between two or more persons to do or not to do some particular thing, originally, especially, or marriage, from Old French contract, Modern French contract, contract from Latin contractus, a drawing together, a shrinking, a contract, an agreement, from past participle of contrahere, to draw several objects together, draw in, shorten, lessen, abridge, it's a tongue twister with me. Metaphorically, make a bargain, make an agreement from as maletic from or come. I mean from form of come with together. See con, trahere, to draw. See track. Noun 1. In reference to the writing which contains the agreement and its terms and conditions. 1610 U.S. underworld sense of arrangement to kill someone, first recorded 1940. Okay. And then we go down. It says contract verb, enter into a contractual agreement. Synonyms, undertake, engage by written agreement. Synonyms, sign, sign on, sign up. Squeeze or press together. The staff's contract, the muscle. Pronounced, compress, constrict, squeeze, compact, press. Be stricken by an illness, fall victim to an illness. Synonyms, take, get, become smaller or draw together. Synonym, shrink, make smaller. The heat contracted the woolen garment. Compress or concentrate. Synonyms, condense, concentrate. Make or become more narrow or restricted. Synonym, narrow. Reduce in scope while retaining essential elements. Abridge for certain. Abbreviate, certain, cut, reduce. Alright. Then it says contract noun. A binding agreement between two or more persons that is enforceable by law. Contract bridge. The highest bid becomes the contract, setting the number of tricks that the bidder must take. Synonyms, declaration. Contract noun. A variety of bridge in which the bidder receives points toward game only for the number of tricks he bid. Synonyms, contract bridge. All right. And that one is the contract etymology. All right. And we're going to go back into the private chat and we'll look up the next one, which is contract clause. All right. And then this one is the Constitution annotated. And we can go down where it says Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1. And it says, no state shall enter into any treaty, allowance, or confederation, and grants, letters of marquis or marquis and reprisal and coin money, emit bills of credit, and make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment and of debt. And pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contract, or grant any title of nobility. The contract clause provides that no state may pass a law impairing the obligation of contracts, and a law in this context may be a statute, constitutional provision, municipal ordinance, or administrative regulations having the force and operation of a statute, but are judicial decisions within the clause. The abstract principle of the separation of powers, at least until recently, forbid the idea that the courts make law and the word pass in the above clause seem to confine it to the formal and acknowledged methods of exercise of the lawmaking function. Accordingly, the court has frequently said that the clause does not cover judicial decisions, however erroneous or whatever the effect on existing contract rights. Nevertheless, there are important expectations to this rule that are set forth below.
Like, that one said exceptions.
Okay. Okay. Nevertheless, there are important exceptions to this rule that I set forth below. All right. Status of judicial decisions. Although the highest state court usually has final authority in determining the construction as well as the validity of contracts entered into under the laws of the state, the federal courts will be bound by decisions of the highest state court on such matters. This rule does not hold when the contract is one whose obligation is alleged to have been impaired by state law. Otherwise, the challenge state authority could be vindicated through the simple device of a modification or outright nullification by the state court of the contract rights in issue. Similarly, the highest state court usually has final authority in construing state statutes and determining their validity in relations to the state constitution. But this rule too has had to bend to some extent to the Supreme Court's interpretation of the contract clause. Suppose the following situation. One, a municipality acting under authority conferred by a state statute has issued bonds in aid of a railway company. Two, the validity of this statute has been sustained by the highest state court. Three, later the state legislator repeals certain taxes to be used to pay off the bonds when they become due. Four, the repeal is sustained by a decision of the highest state court holding that the statute authorizing the bond was unconstitutional ab initio. Did I pronounce that right?
Ab initio.
In such a case, the Supreme Court would take an appeal from the state court and would reverse the latter's decisions of unconstitutionality because of its effect in rendering operative the repeal of the tax. Suppose, however, that the state court has held the statute authorizing the bonds unconstitutional ab initio in a suit by a creditor for payment without the state legislators having repealed the taxes. In this situation, the Supreme Court will still afford relief if the case were one between citizens of different states which reached it via a lower federal court. This is because in cases of this nature, the court formerly felt free to determine questions of fundamental justice for itself. Indeed, in such a case, the court in the past has apparently regarded itself as free to pass upon the constitutionality of the state law authorizing the bonds, even though there had been no prior decision by the highest state court sustaining them. The idea being that contracts entered into simply on the faith of the presumed constitutionality of the state statute are entitled to this protection. In other words, in cases in which it has jurisdiction because of diversity of citizenship, the court has held that the obligation of contract is capable of impairment by a subsequent judicial decisions no less than by subsequent statutes, and that it is able to prevent such impairment in cases, on the other hand, of which it obtains jurisdiction only on the constitutional ground and by appeal from a state court. It has always adhered in terms to the doctrine that the word laws, as used in Article 1, Subsection 10, does not include judicial decisions. Yet, even in these cases, it will intervene to protect contract interest into on the faith of existing decisions from an impairment that is the direct result of a reversal of such decisions. But there must be in the offing as it were a statue of some kind, one possibly many years older than the contract rights involved, on which to pin its decision. Okay. In 1922, Congress, through an amendment to the Judicial Code, endeavored to extend the reviewing power of the Supreme Court to any suit involving the validity of a contract wherein it is claimed that a change in the rule of law or construction of statutes by the highest court of the state applicable to such contract would be repugnant to the Constitution of the United States. This appeared to be an invitation to the court to say, frankly, that the obligation of a contract can be impaired by a subsequent court decision. The court, however, declined the invitation in an opinion by Chief Justice Taft that reviewed many of the cases covered in the preceding paragraphs. Dealing with Gelpeck, and subsequent decisions, Chief Justice Taft said, these cases were not writs of errors to the Supreme Court of a state. They were appeals of writs of errors to federal courts where recovery was sought upon municipal or county bounds or some other form of contract, the validity of which had been sustained by decisions of the Supreme Court of a state prior to their execution and had been denied by the same court after their issue or making. In such cases, the federal courts exercise a jurisdiction between citizens of different states held themselves free to decide what the state law was and to enforce it as laid down by the state Supreme Court before the contracts were made rather than in later decisions. They did not base this conclusion on Article 1, Subsection 10 of the Federal Constitution, but on the state law as they determined it, which in diverse citizenship cases under the third article of the federal constitution, they were empowered to do. Burgess versus Seligman, 107 U.S. 20, 1883. I'm gonna have to look that one up. All right. Although doubtness, this was an this was an available explanation in 1924. The decision in 1938 in Erie Railroad Co. versus Thompson 13. So, cut down the power of the federal courts to decide diversity of citizenship cases according to their own notions of general principles of common law. Raise the question whether the court will not be required eventually to be to put Gelpec and its companies and descendants squarely on the contract clause or something abandon them.
Or else,
and then it
or
says,
else.
You said, or else? Else abandon them. Oh, okay. Okay. And it says,
we could start
obligations.
Because we on a 30-minute mark.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
So we
well, we could go into a quick break real quick and man, jump back into it.
All right, for sure. Peace to the God.
All right. Peace to the gods.
It ain't like you hearing it and it's like moving you. You know, music is, and the music you making is life, and it's like new life. It's important for me to understand the state of mind and the life you live and where you're, you know, where you're at right now.
Pull up like surprise, surprise is the president. Can't you see that I'm in my element? I might just decide to slide on my enemies. I go along on a glide for the hell of it. I bring a different vibe when I'm stepping in. If a nigga ain't right, I'm correcting it. Everybody know for sure I'ma take it there. So close your teeth and dot your eyes when you're messaging. I never subscribe to guys on the internet. Living for the clout, telling lies to depress again. Better don't take me for the fool, I ain't never been. Don't bother with lies, I'm wise when I'm checking them. I'm redirecting them back to this endament. Then you go see reality, go start arresting them. Feel I see them no here when I was telling them. But life real, I ain't living like the rest of them.
Yes, we are blessed, but it's hard as it seems sometimes. Trying to find my peace of mind. You said, how could you be so blind, baby? You just follow your dreams, you gotta live your life. I give you something to believe in. I'ma be the reason. So please say it won't be. Real life is for living, but the price you've been given is not cheap. So please say, we'll share the whole fee. Real life is for living, there's just
I wonder which style them guys them go try now. If one or never hear my story, make you find out. I know say nobody is an island. But if them want fuck you from yash, make you no lie down. And I know you feed me, but they realize them. But the way you done, they move, I know they like them. Somebody want to wear this shoe and those eyes on. May I be destiny's child, a survivor. Real no be China, from young I've been a guy. And nothing I ever said ever been alive. And it's time you see me look up in the sky. I can see the daylight in the night. When you see a soldier smile, it's a good sign. That's the way it is in the south time. I don't go let you slide, no, not this time. Right now I'm trying to rap, I got good time. Good time.
Yes, we are blessed, but it's hard as it seems sometimes. Trying to find my peace of mind. You said, how could you be so blind, babe? You just follow your dreams, you gotta live your life. I give you something to believe in, I'ma be the reason. So please, please say, say it won't be. Real life it's been living, but the price you've been given's not cheap. So please say, we'll share the whole fee, yeah. Real life it's been living, use this life that you live in, be free.
So Shalom and good day to the goddesses and gods. We hope your daily life is going pleasant, divine. If you continue to listen to this record, your psyche is voluntarily entering the terms and agreements of all good and no evil. Anyone who is found utilizing evil will be exiled by the host. And this is a notice and disclaimer inside for the love of commerce. We never give legal advice and we never practice law. If you are searching for those things, you will have to search somewhere outside for the love of commerce. So for all mention, we offer grace and benevolence.
Peace to the gods, peace to the gods, man. We are back, we are back, we are back, man. Man, that's interesting, man, about the whole contract thing. I'm looking forward to the rest of the show because, man, hey, this is going to teach me something as well. You know, we have lot of issues on our ends when it comes to contracts all day, so... man, I'm just interested into what this topic brings us today. So, you know, man, I'm gonna sit back and stay joined in, Kalam.
Okay, bet. All right, and we're gonna continue from the same reading. For those who just stepped in, we are on Constitution annotated inside of the chart, and we're talking about Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1. All right, and we're going to continue where it says obligation defined. A contract is not analyzable into two elements: the agreement, which comes from the parties, and the obligation, which comes from the law and makes the agreement binding on the parties. The concept of obligation is an important importation from the civil law, and its appearance in the contract clause is supposed to have been due to James Wilson, a graduate of Scottish universities and a civilian. Actually, the term as used in the contract clause has been rendered more or less superfluous by the doctrine that the laws which exist at the time and place of the making of a contract and where it is to be performed enter into a form of form a part of it. And it says superfluous in here, which you spell that is, it's spelled superfluous. That just means surplus or unnecessary. I'm going to continue. It says, hence, the court sometimes recognized the term in its decisions applying the clause and sometimes ignores it. In Sturgis versus Crown and Shield, in Sturgis is spelled Sturges versus Crowninshield. Crown and Shield. Chief Justice Marshall defined obligation of contract as the law that binds a party to perform his undertaking. But a little later, the same year, in Dartmouth College versus Woodward, which Dartmouth College is spelled Dartmouth space College versus Woodward, Woodward. He set forth the points presented for considerations to be: number one, is this contract protected by the Constitution of the United States? Number two, is it impaired by the acts under which the defendant holds? The word obligation undoubtedly implies that the Constitution was intended to protect only executory contracts, i.e., contracts still awaiting performance. But this implication was rejected early on for a certain class of contracts with immensely important result for the clause. And immensely is spelled I-M-M-E-N-S-E-L-Y. And the definition for immensely is extremely, to a great extent, extremely. And we're going to go into the next paragraph that says impaired defined. The obligations of a contract, said Chief Justice Hughes for the court in Home Building and Loan Assent versus Blaisdell. Blaisdell is spelled B-L-A-I-S-D-E-L-L. Are impaired by a law which renders them invalid, or releases or extinguishes them. An impairment has been predicated upon laws which, without destroying contracts, derogate from substantial contractual rights. But he adds, not only are existing laws read into contracts in order to fix obligations as between the parties, but the reservation of essential attributes of sovereign power is also read into contracts as a postulate of the legal order, or postulate. Postulate is spelled P-O-S-T-U-L-A-T-E, and postulate means to put forward. Yeah. And it continues to say, the policy of protecting contracts against impairment presupposes the maintenance of a government by virtue of which contractual relations are worthwhile. A government which retains adequate authority to secure the peace and good order of society. This principle of harmonizing the constitutional prohibition with the necessary residuum of state power has had progressive recognition in the decisions of this court. And residuum is spelled R-E-S-I-D-U-U-M. Now let's look a quick definition for that one. A sub-residuum, a substance or thing that remains or is left behind, in particular, a chemical residue. Yeah, that's what it says for that. Continuing, in short, the law from which the obligation stems must be understood to include constitutional law, and moreover, a progressive constitutional law. And progressive just means continuing or liberal. And we're going to go down where it says private contracts. It says the term private contract is naturally not all inclusive. A judgment, though granted in favor of a creditor, is not a contract in the sense of the Constitution, nor is marriage. And whether A particular agreement is a valid contract is a question for the courts. And finally, for the Supreme Court, when the protection of the contract clause is invoked, the question of the nature and source of the obligation of a contract, which went by default in Fletcher versus Peck. Fletcher is spelled F-L-E-T-C-H-E-R. Peck is spelled P-E-C-K. And the Dartmouth College case. With such vastly important consequences had eventually to be met and answered by the court in connection with private contracts. The first case involving such a contract to reach the Supreme Court was Sturgis versus Crown and Shield, in which a debtor sought escape behind the State Insolvency Act of later date than his note. The act was held inoperative. Inoperative is spelled I-N-O-P. Or inoperative. It's spelled I-N-O-P-E-R-A-T-I-V-E. And inoperative means not working or void. So it says the act was held inoperative, but whether this was because of its retroactivity in this particular case or for the broader reason, the broader reason that it assumes to excuse debtors from their promises was not at the time made clear. As noted earlier, Chief Justice Marshall's definition on this occasion of the obligation of a contract as the law that binds the parties to perform their undertakings was not free from ambiguity. Owing to the uncertain connotation of the term, in quotation marks, law. These obscurities were finally cleared up for most cases in Ogden versus Saunders. And Ogden is spelled O-G-D-E-N. Saunders is spelled S-A-U-N-D-E-R-S. All right. In which the temporal relation of the statute and the contract involved was exactly reversed. The former intedating the later. Intedating is spelled A-N-T-E-D-A-T-I-N-G. And the definition for that is proceed. Chief Justice Marshall contended unsuccessfully that the statute was void because it purported to release the debtor from that original intrinsic obligation that always attaches under natural law to the acts of free agents. When he wrote, we advert to the course of reading generally pursued by American statesmen in early life. We must suppose that the framers of our Constitution were intimately acquainted with the writings of those wise and learned men whose treatises on the laws of nature and nations have guided public opinion on the subjects of obligations and contracts, and that they took their views on these subjects from those sources. He also posed the question of what would happen to the contract clause if states might pass acts declaring that all contracts made subsequently thereto should be subject to legislative control. For the first and only time, a majority of the court abandoned the Chief Justice's leadership. Speaking by Justice Washington, it held that the obligation of private contracts is derived from the municipal law, state statutes, and judicial decisions, and that the inhibition of Article 1, Subsection 10, is confined to legislative acts made after the contracts affected by them, subject to the following exception. By a curiously complicated line of reasoning, the court also held in the same case that when the creditor is a non-resident, then a state by insolvency law may not alter the former's right under a contract, albeit one of later date. Albeit is spelled A-L-B-E-I-T. And the definition for that is a conjunction, although. So it just means although. So, and let's look at what an insolvency is. Insolvency just means bankruptcy, the state of being insolvent, inability to pay one's debt. And it continues to say, with the proposition established that the obligation of a private contract comes from the municipal law in existence when the contract is made, a further question presents itself, namely, what part of the municipal law is referred to? No doubt, the law which determines the validity of the contract itself is a part of such law. Also part of such law is the law which interprets the terms used in the contract, or which supplies certain terms when others are used. As for instance, constitutional provisions or statutes which determine what is legal tender for the payment of debts, or judicial decisions which construe the term for value received, as used in a promissory note, and so on. In short, any law which at the time of the making of a contract goes to measure the rights and duties of the parties to it in relation to each other enters into its obligation. All right, and this one says remedy, a part of the private obligation. Suppose, however, that one of the parties to a contract fails to live up to his obligation, as therefore or thus determined. The contract itself may now be regarded as at an end, but the injured party nevertheless has a new set of rights in its stead, those which are furnished him by the remedial law, including the law of procedure. In the case of a mortgage, he may foreclose, and in the case of a promissory note, he may sue, and in certain cases, he may demand specific performance. Hence, the further question arises whether this remedial law is to be considered a part of the law supplying the obligation of contracts. Originally, the predominating opinion was negative, since, as we have just seen, this law does not really come into operation until the contract has been broken. Yet, it is obvious that the sanction which this law lends to contracts is extremely important, indeed, indispensable. In due course, it became the accepted doctrine that part of the law which supplies one party to a contract with a remedy if the other party does not live up to his agreement, as authoritatively interpreted, entered into the obligation of contracts in the constitutional sense of this term. and so might not be altered to the material weakening of existing contracts. In the court's own words, nothing can be more material to the obligation than the means of enforcement. Without the remedy, the contract may indeed, in the sense of the law, be said not to exist, and its obligation to fall within the class of those moral and social duties which depend for their fulfillment wholly upon the will of the individual. The ideas of validity and remedy are inseparable. This rule was first definitely announced in 1843 in Bronson versus Kinsey. And Bronson is spelled B-R-O-N-S-O-N. Kinsey is spelled K-I-N-Z-I-E. Here, an Illinois mortgage giving the mortgage an unrestricted power of sale in case of the mortgagers default was involved, along with a later act of the legislature that required mortgage premises to be sold for not less than two-thirds of the appraised value and allowed the mortgager a year after the sale to redeem them. It was held that the statute, in altering the pre-existing remedies to such an extent, violated the Constitution prohibition and hence was void. The year following, a like ruling was made in McCracken versus Hayward. McCracken is spelled M-C-C-R-A-C-K-E-N. And then it's how Hayward is spelled, H-A-Y-W-A-R-D. As to a statutory provision that personal property should not be sold under execution for less than two-thirds of its appraised value. But the rule illustrated by these cases does not signify that a statute or the... Let me read that again. But the rule illustrated by these cases does not signify that a state may make no changes in its remedial or procedural law that affect existing contracts, provided the court has said a substantial or officious remedy remains or is given. And officious is spelled officious. E-F-F-I-C-A-C-I-O-U-S. Look that up real quick. And it just means effective, successful in producing a desired or intended result, effective. A substantial or efficacious remedy remains or is given by means of which a party can enforce his rights under the contract. The legislature may modify or change existing remedies or prescribe new modes of procedure. Therefore, states are constantly remodeling their judicial systems and modes of practice, unembarrassed by the contract clause. The right of a state to abolish imprisonment for debt was early asserted. Again, the right of a state to shorten the time of the bringing of actions has been affirmed even as to existing causes of action. But with the proviso, which is spelled P-R-O-V-I-S-O, added that a reasonable time must be left for the bringing of such actions. On the other hand, a statute which withdrew the judicial power to enforce satisfaction of a certain class of judgments by mandamus was held invalid. In the words of the court, in quotation, every case must be determined upon its own circumstances. And it later added, in all such cases, the question becomes one of reasonableness and of that the legislature is primarily the judge. Contracts involving municipal bonds merit special mention. While a city is from one point of view but an emanation from the government's sovereignty and an agent thereof, when it borrows money, it is held to be acting in a corporate or private capacity, and so to be a suable on its contracts. Therefore, as was held in the leading case of the United States ex rel Von Hoffman versus Quincy, and Von Hoffman is spelled V-O-N space H-O-F-F-M-A-N, and Quincy is spelled Q-U-I-N-C-Y. Where a state has authorized a municipal corporation to contract and to exercise the power of a local taxation to the extent necessary to meet its engagements, the power, therefore, given cannot be withdrawn until the contract is satisfied. In this case, the court issued a mandamus compelling the city officials to levy taxes for the satisfaction of a judgment on its bonds in accordance with the law as it stood when the bonds were issued. Nor may a state by divided an indebted municipality, among others, enable it to escape its obligations. The debt follows the territory and the duty of assessing and collecting taxes to satisfy its devolves upon the seceding corporations and their officers. But where a municipal organization has ceased practically to exist through the vacation of its offices, and the government's function is exercised once more by the state directly, the court has therefore, or thus far, found itself powerless to frustrate a program of repudiation. And repudiation is spelled R-E-P-U-D-I-A-T-I-O-N. The definition for repudiation is rejection or denial. Rejection of a proposal or idea. Denial of the truth or validity of something. However, there is no reason why the state should enact the role of particeps criminis. Particeps criminis is spelled P-A-R-T-I-C-E-P-S space C-R-I-M-I-N-I-S. So let's look up that as well. Clicked on that. Slow enough, and it says particeps criminis, one who takes part in a crime. However, there is no reason why the state should enact the role of particeps criminis in an attempt to relieve its municipalities of the obligation to meet their honest debts. Therefore, in 1931, during the Great Depression, New Jersey created a municipal finance commission with power to assume control over its insolvent municipalities. To the complaint of certain bondholders that this legislation impaired the contract obligations of their debtors. The court, speaking by Justice Frank Fruter, Frank Fruter is spelled F-R-A-N-K-F-U-R-T-E-R, pointed out that the practical value of an unsecured claim against a city is the effectiveness of the city's taxing power, which the legislation under review was designed to conserve. All right. Should we continue this one? Yeah, we'll continue this one. That's a lot. All right, and the next one says private contracts and the police power. The increasing subjection of public grants to the police power of the states has been previously pointed out that purely private contracts should be in any stronger situation in this respect, obviously, would be anomalous. In the extreme, anomalous is spelled A-N-O-M-A-L-O-U-S. And anomalous just means abnormal, deviating from what is standard, normal, or expected. In point of fact, the ability of private parties to curtail, which is spelled C-U-R-T-A-L, which means to reduce. Reduce an extent or quantity imposed a restriction on. In point of fact, the ability of private parties to curtail governmental authority by the easy device of contracting with one another is, with an exception to be noted, even less than that of the state to tie its own hands by contracting away its own powers. So when it was contended in an early Pennsylvania case that an act prohibiting the issuance of notes by unincorporated banking associations violated the contract clause because of its effect upon certain existing contracts of members of such association, the state Supreme Court answered, in quotation, "But it is said that the members had formed a contract between themselves, which would be dissolved by the stoppage of their business. And what then? Is that such a violation of contracts as is prohibited by the Constitution of the United States? Consider to what such a construction would lead. Let us suppose that in one of the states there is no law against gaming, cockfighting, horse racing, or public masquerades, and that companies should be formed for the purpose of carrying on these practices. Would the legislature then be powerless to prohibit them?" Then answer returned, of course, was no. The prevailing doctrine was stated by the U.S. Supreme Court, in quotation, "It is the settled law of this court that the interdiction of statutes impairing the obligation of contracts does not prevent the state from exercising such powers as are vested in it for the promotion of the common well." Or wheel, and that the well is, or wheel is spelled W-E-A-L, and that just meant welt, a red swollen mark left on flesh by a blow or pressure, or are necessary for the general good of the public. Though contracts previously entered into between individuals may thereby be affected, in other words, that parties by entering into contracts may not stop that the legislature from enacting laws intended for the public good. Also, in an early case, we find a state recording act upheld as applying to deeds dated before the passage of the act. Later cases have brought the police power in its more customary phases into contract with private as well as with public contracts. Lottery tickets, valid when issued, were necessarily invalidated by legislation prohibiting the lottery business. Contracts for the sale of beer, valid when entered into, were similarly nullified by a state prohibition law. Contracts for the sale of beer, valid when entered into, were similarly nullified by a state prohibition law. And contracts of employment were modified by later laws regarding the liability of employers and workmen's compensation. Likewise, a contract between plaintiff and defendant did not prevent the state from making the latter, which is spelled L-A-T-T-E-R, which just means later or latest, a concession that rendered the contract worthless, and nor did a contract as to rates between two railway companies prevent the state from imposing different rates, and nor did a contract between a public utility company and a customer protect the rates agreed upon from being superseded by those fixed by the state. Similarly, a contract for the conveyance of water beyond the limits of a state did not prevent the state from prohibiting such conveyance. But the most striking exertions of the police power touching private contracts as well as other private interests within recent years have been evoked by war and economic depression. Therefore, in World War I, the state of New York enacted a statute which, declaring that a public emergency existed, forbid the enforcement of covenants for the surrender of the possession of premises on the expiration of leases, and wholly deprived for a period owners of dwellings, including apartment and tenements houses within the city of New York and contiguous counties of possessory remedies for the eviction from their premises of tenants in possession when the law took effect, providing the latter were able and willing to pay a reasonable rent. In answer to objections leveled against this legislation on the basis of the contract clause, the court said, in quotation, "But contracts are made subject to this exercise of the power of the state when otherwise justified, as we have held this to be. In a subsequent case, however, the court added that although the declaration by the legislature of a justifying emergency was entitled to great respect, it was not conclusive. A law depending upon the existence of an emergency or other certain state of facts to uphold it may cease to operate if the emergency ceases or the facts change, and whether they have changed was always open to judicial inquiry." And it continues. It says, summing up the result
of the cases referred to above, Chief Justice Hughes speaking for the court in Home Building and Loan Assen versus Blasdell remarked in 1934, it is, in quotation, it is manifest from this review of our decisions that there has been a growing appreciation of public needs and of the necessity of finding ground for a rational compromise between individual rights and public welfare. The settlement and consequent contraction of the public domain, the pressure of a constantly increasing density of population, the interrelation of the activities of our people, and the complexity of our economic interests have inevitably led to an increased use of the organization of society in order to protect the very basis of individual opportunity. Where, in early days, it was thought that only the concerns of individuals or of classes were involved, and that those of the state itself were touched only remotely, it has later been found that the fundamental interests of the state are directly affected, and that the question is no longer merely that of one party to a contract as against another, but of the use of reasonable means to safeguard the economic structure upon which the good of all depends. The principle of this development is that the reservation of the reasonable exercise of the protective power of the states is read into all contracts. Evaluation of the clause today. So I guess this is like the summary of everything. And it says the evaluation of the clause today. It should not be inferred that the contract clause is today totally moribund. Moribund is spelled M-O-R-I-B-U-N-D. And it means dying or declining of a person at the point of death. Even prior to the most recent decisions, it still furnished the basis for some degree of judicial review as to the substantiality of the factual justification of a professed exercise by a state legislature of its police power, and in the case of legislation affecting the remedial rights of creditors, it still affords a solid and palpable barrier against legislation erosion. And palpable is spelled P-A-L-P-A-B-L-E. You'll search that up real quick. Palpable, tangible, perceptible. All right. And it says, nor is this surprising in view of the fact that, as we have seen, such rights were foremost in the minds of the framers of the clause. The court's attitude toward insolvency laws, redemption laws, exemption laws, appraisement laws, and the like has always been that they may not be given retroactive operation. Right. And the general lesson of these earlier cases is confirmed by the court's decisions between 1934 and 1945. In certain cases involving state moratorium statutes and moratorium, which means a temporary prohibition of an activity, or it also means an embargo. Statues. In Home Building and Loan Assent versus Blaisdell, the leading case, a closely divided court sustained the Minnesota Moratorium Act of April 18, 1933, which recited the existence of a severe financial and economic depression for several years and the frequent occurrence of mortgage foreclosure sales for inadequate prices, and asserting that these conditions had created an economic emergency calling for the exercise of the state's police power, authorized its courts to extend the period for redemption from foreclosure sales for such additional time as they might deem just and equitable, although in no event beyond May 1, 1935. The act also left the mortgager in possession during the period of extension, subject to the requirement that he pay a reasonable rent for the property as fixed by the court. Contemporaneously, which is spelled contemporaneously, and that just means existing or occurring in the same period of time. However, less carefully drawn statutes from Missouri and Arkansas, acts that were not as considerate of creditors' rights, were set aside as violating the contract clause. A state is free to regulate the procedure in its course, even with reference to contracts already made. Said Justice Cardozo is spelled C-A-R-D-O-Z-O for the court, in quotation, and moderate extension of the time for pleading or for trial will ordinarily fall within the powers so reserved. A different situation is presented when extensions are so piled up as to make the remedy a shadow. What controls our judgment at such time is the underlying reality rather than the form or label. The changes of remedy now challenged as invalid are to be viewed in combination with the cumulative significance that each imparts to all. So viewed, they are seen to be an oppressive and unnecessary destruction of nearly all the incidents that gives attractiveness and value to collateral security. On the other hand, in the most recent of this category of cases, the court gave its approval to an extension by the state of New York of its moratorium legislation. While recognizing that business conditions had improved, the court found reason to believe that, in quotation, the sudden termination of the legislation, which has dammed up normal liquidation of these mortgages for more than 8 years, might well result in an emergency more acute than that which the original legislation was intended to alleviate. All right, where was we? In the meantime, the court has sustained New York state legislation under which a mortgagee of real property was denied a deficiency judgment in a foreclosure suit where the state court found that the value of the property purchased by the mortgagee at the foreclosure sale was equal to the debt secured by the mortgage. Mortgagees, the court said, in quotation, are constitutionally entitled to no more than payment in full. To hold that mortgagees are entitled under the contract clause to retain the advantages of a forced sale would be to dignify into a constitutionally protected property right their chance to get more than the amount of their contracts. The contract clause does not protect such a strategical procedural advantage. While the contracts clause remains a part of our written constitution, not every state law affecting pre-existing contracts violates the constitution. Instead, the court has applied a two-part test to determine whether a law unconstitutionally impairs a contractual obligation. First, the state law must operate as a substantial impairment of a contractual relationship. And substantial impairment is spelled substantial space impairment. To determine whether a substantial impairment has occurred, the court has considered the extent to which the law undermines the contractual bargain, interferes with a party's reasonable expectations, and prevent the party from safeguarding or reinstating his rights. For instance, in Sveen versus Mellon, and Sveen is spelled S-B-E-E-N, and Mellon is spelled M-E-L-I-N. The court held that a Minnesota law automatically revoking upon a couple's divorce any life insurance policy designating a spouse to be the beneficiary did not substantially impair pre-existing contractual agreements. Specifically, the Sveen court held as such because the law in question, one, was designed to reflect a policyholder's presumed intent that an ex-spouse not benefit from the policyholder's insurance. Number two, does not upset the beneficiary's expectation. As a divorce court's resolution of the marital assets could have upset the beneficiary designation anyways. And three, provides a more default rule that could be reversed with the stroke of the pen. In rejecting the contract clause challenge, the Sveen court viewed the Minnesota law to be in line with other state laws that impose default rules facilitating the orderly disposition of property interests. And it says, second, if substantial impairment has occurred, the court then turns to the means and ends of the legislation to determine if it violates the contract clause. Specifically, the court has asked whether the state law is drawn in an appropriate and reasonable way to advance a significant and legitimate public purpose. Applying this standard in two cases in the late 1970s, the court struck down state legislation that impaired either the government's own contractual obligation or private contracts. In United States Trust the court ruled that an impairment would be upheld only if it were necessary and reasonable to serve an important public purpose. But the two terms were given restrictive meanings. Necessity is shown only when the state's objectives could not have been achieved through less dramatic modifications of the contract, and reasonableness is a function of the extent to which alteration of the contract was prompted by circumstances unforeseen at the time of its formation. The repeal of the convenient in issue was found to fail both prongs of the test. In Spanus, which is spelled S-P-A-N-N-A-U-S, the court drew from its prior cases four standards. Did the law deal with a broad, generalized economic or social problem? Did it operate in an area already subject to state regulation at the time the contractual obligations were entered into? Did it affect simply a temporary alteration of the contractual relationship? And did the contract did the law operate upon a broad class of affected individuals or concerns? The court found that the challenge law did not possess any of these attributes and therefore struck it down. These cases seem to embody more active judicial review of economic regulatory activities in contrast to the difference shown such legislation under the Due Process and Equal Protection Clauses. Both cases contain language emphasizing the breadth of the police powers of government that may be used to further the public interest and admit limited judicial scrutiny. Nevertheless, if the contract clause is to retain any meaning at all, it must be understood to impose some limits upon the power of state to abridge existing contractual relationship, even in the exercise of its otherwise legitimate police powers. And that was the end of that read. I know that one was kind of long. We went all over the show just a lot of it, but it was a good reading. You know, since we gone over the show anyway, I'll just add in this short one. Versus a contract. A contract is a legally, and this is from the Wikipedia inside the private chat, a contract is a legally enforceable agreement that creates, defines, and governs mutual rights and obligation among its parties. A contract typically involves the transfer of goods, services, money, or a promise to transfer any of those at a future date. In the event of a breach of contract, the injured party may seek judicial remedies such as damages or rescission. Contract law, the field of the law of obligations concerned with contracts, is based on the principle that agreements must be honored. Contract law, like other areas of private law, varies between jurisdictions. The various systems of contract law can broadly be split between common law jurisdiction and civil jurisdiction and mixed law jurisdiction, which combine elements of both common and civil law. Common law jurisdiction typically require contracts to include consideration in order to be valid, whereas civil and most mixed law jurisdictions solely require a meeting of the minds between the parties, Within the overarching category of civil law jurisdiction, there are several distinct varieties of contract law with their own distinct criteria. The German tradition is characterized by the unique doctrine of abstraction, system based on the Napoleonic Code, are characterized by their systematic distinction between different types of contracts, and Roman Dutch law is largely based on the writings of Renaissance-era Dutch jurists and case law applying general principles of Roman law prior to the Netherlands adopting of the Napoleonic Code. The majority of Southern Africa uses a mixed law system under which private law, including contract law, is largely drawn from Roman Dutch law, while public law is drawn from English common law, which several former British colonies, which were previously French, apply a system in which private law is drawn from the French legal tradition. The Unidroit, which is spelled UNIDROIT, principles of international commercial contracts, published in 2016, aimed to provide a general harmonized framework for international contracts independent of the divergence between national laws, as well as a statement of common contractual principles for arbitrators and judges to apply where national laws are lacking. Notably, the principles reject the doctrine of consideration under the grounds that the elimination of the doctrine can only bring about greater certainty and reduce litigation in international trade. The principle also reject the abstraction principle integral to German law on the grounds that it and similar doctrine are not easily compatible with modern business perceptions and practice. Contract law can be contrasted with tort law, also referred to in some but not all civil and mixed jurisdiction as the law of delects, which is spelled D-E-L-I-C-T-S, the other major area of the law of obligations. While tort law generally deals with private duties and obligations that exist by operation of law and provide remedies for civil wrongs committed between individuals not in a pre-existing legal relationship, contract law provides for the creation and enforcement of duties and obligations created by a prior agreement between parties. The emergence of quasi-contract, quasi-torts, and quasi-delects renders the boundary between tort and contract law somewhat uncertain. Other areas of the law of obligations, which are occasionally treated as separate from both contract and tort law, include the laws of unjust enrichment. And then if we go to another one, it says United States contract law. Contract law regulates the obligations established by agreement, whether expressed or implied, between private parties in the United States. The law of contract varies from state to state. There is nationwide federal contract law in certain areas, such as contracts pursuant to federal reclamation law. The law governing transactions involving the sale of goods has become highly standardized nationwide through widespread adoption of the Uniform Commercial Code. There remains significant diversity in the interpretation of other kinds of contracts, depending on the extent to which a given but again, these remain significant diversity in the interpretation of other kinds of contracts, depending upon the extent to which a given state has codified its common law of contracts or adopted portions of the restatement second of contracts. And yeah, that was the end of the show. I know the show went over a lot, but it's just for the archive. I know we ain't did a show like that in a minute. We normally do. We don't really go that deep inside, or even deeper inside the private chat, or we have our private sessions and our private meetings. But yeah, hope y'all have a beautiful day and y'all love the information. But I'm not gonna go too much into the contracts. I'm just let y'all re-listen and, you know, y'all interpret it. So, peace to the gods.
I'm gonna tell you this right now. If you woke up this morning, nigga, you winning for real. Dog. Yeah. I got a big amount. I took a different route. I am the pick or the little. I was a juvie, it gave me community, I had to pick up some little. I want to ease it, please do not tease me, I want my Yeezy to journal. This is the season, I got the season, don't make me sprinkle you niggas. I got my reason, you wanna please me, send me the pussy, not pictures. Met her this week and fuck her this evening, she turn a freak on the liquor. Yeah, I am a boss on these bitches, yeah, I post a boss on these bitches, yeah, I have no thoughts on these bitches, yeah, rocked up across on these bitches, yeah, dealer departed, y'all of the day, on some Prince shit, you know what they say. Me and my say, got a friendship, 10 on me, thin weight, flip weight, getting paid, getting late, bitch made, took off 6 days, 6 tray, 6 4, bounce, bitch, bounce, hood nigga, favorite spot was the Whopper House, patty melt with the hash brown, trying to board all the pat downs, trying to board all the lane hole, weirdos in the background, black out when I back out. Blow the horn for a pedestrian, short ride like an equestrian. I bought the dress that she in, red bottoms in his and hers. Got a rollie in his and hers, got a car in his and hers. Walk in the zoo and say pick a fur, last night was a blur to me. This morning I had two with me, I don't know what to do with me. Going ape like the zoo with me, got a tool with a screw missing. Two girls in the pool kissing, everywhere I go to ride with me. Cutting niggas acting too fishy,
Fuck y'all niggas on, man. Duffel bag forever. Just left V Live. Atlanta could never die long as Tit alive.
Yeah. Look, I got a big amount. I think I'm the biggest out. Got hits and I ain't even put them out. Lit and you can't even put it out. Got the Billboard melodies. Rapping something I do on the side. Crossed over to the other side. And I didn't even have to die. Got the money and I never show it. Let a nigga try and play heroic. Michael Jackson talking to me in my dreams, and he say you bad and you know it. Better Shimon on my check then. I'm a J Prince investment. Niggas love to talk reckless. They ain't see me like best friends. Got the same color FN. And I never seen the inside of a Marriott or a West End. 5 stars, nothing less than. Fuck niggas on your payroll. And you let them know the safe code. And you knew him for a month though. But you call them niggas big bro. You can move in and hidden hills, and we still don't live by the same code. I'm respected everywhere I go. Nigga long live bankroll. Skip the rainbow, funny style.